Turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. Before we read our text, the setting of the book of Hebrews is that the children of God are surrounded by unbelievers, the influence of unbelievers. This influence of unbelievers is presented throughout the book as a great threat, great danger to the children of God. This is seen from the warnings given throughout the book. They were warned against drifting from the things that they had heard. They were warned against disbelieving the voice of God, against coming short of the promises of God. They warned against failing, falling, against leaving the elementary principles. They are warned against thinking lightly of truth. More than one occasion, they were warned of devaluing the grace of God. They're warned against drawing back from God, against fainting in their minds. They are warned against becoming discouraged and drained spiritually, and against just being turned away from the Word of God. These warnings show that these were very real dangers to the Hebrew saints. And they are no less real today. They are real dangers for you and I today. In view of these dangers, the writer of Hebrews writes to stimulate these believers, to embolden them to continue on, to persevere in the life that God had called them to live. In fact, 13 times the writer uses the phrase, "let us," followed by a particular duty. He said, "let us fear, let us labor, let us hold fast our profession, let us come boldly to the throne of grace, let us go on, let us draw near, let us hold fast, let us consider one another, let us lay aside every weight, let us run, let us have grace, let us go forth, let us offer the sacrifice or sacrifices of praise." And every time we see those words, "let us," it is in the present tense, conveying the idea of continuance and progression. So the arrangement of the book of Hebrews is to admonish, is to exhort, to motivate and encourage the children of God not to remain stationary, not to lose heart, but to be always advancing spiritually. Therefore, throughout the book, the writer establishes the preeminence of Christ and makes Christ the main feature and focal point of the book. Because if we're going to do these things, Christ must be preeminent. Christ must be the focal point. If the dangers are to be overcome, the preeminence of Christ must be firmly established, not outwardly, but in our hearts. Christ must be preeminent. With the desire that God's people, the saved by grace, not be sucked in by the ungodly influence of the unbelievers, the writer exhorts them to have faith. He warns against the antithesis of faith. In Hebrews 3 and verse 12, he says, "Take heed, brethren." That's individually. "Lest there be in any of you an evil." It's evil. "An evil heart of unbelief, departing from the living God." Unbelief is a departure. Unbelief will lead to further departure. So faith is the key element in resisting the pull of the world. Faith is the key element in advancing and continuing on spiritually. That brings us to our text. Hebrews 11, verses 13 through 16. "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things, that they're pilgrims and strangers on the earth, declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city." As we come to this 11th chapter, and we've preached many times, of course, from this chapter, we have a record of ordinary men and women who were enabled to do the extraordinary by the means of faith. It is a record of ordinary men and women, that is, flesh and blood, who made a difference with their life by the means of faith. It is a record of men and women who were a blessing and an encouragement and have been throughout the years a testimony to the children of God throughout the ages. This 11th chapter, of course, is a God-inspired record of the impact of the power, the force, the workings, the achievements of faith in the lives of men and women. Notice our text opens there in verse 13. These all, referring back to Abel, who sacrificed by faith, referring back to Enoch, who walked with God by faith, referring back to Noah, who did the work of God by faith, referring back to Abraham, who obeyed by faith, and referring back to Sarah, who trusted in the faithfulness of God. So though what is said here in our text refers directly back to what has been previously mentioned, I believe it also has reference to those mentioned in the following verses as well. And what is said here ought to be true of you and I that are saved. Notice in our text, verse 13, "These all, they were strangers." A stranger is a person who's away from home. It's a foreigner. One who's not fully accepted in the land that he or she is in. They're strangers and pilgrims. Pilgrims is one who is journeying through a foreign land. These all were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. And it's important that we realize you and I that are saved, that in this life we are foreigners and pilgrims just passing through. Paul said in Philippians 3 and verse 20, for our conversation, that is our citizenship, is in heaven. And I'm afraid that most of God's people have long ago lost sight of the fact that this old sinful world is not our home. We are strangers and pilgrims. And the days that we live upon this earth are our traveling days. And that'll be our subject this morning. Traveling days. In this message, we want to call your attention to what follows those first two words, these all. We want to notice seven ways that faith impacted their lives as they traveled through this world. And I ask that each one of us that are saved, that we would examine and measure our own lives by what we read here. Number one, these in their traveling days persevered. These all died in faith. Now, before they could die, they had to live. Before they could die in faith, they had to live in faith. You don't die in faith without living in faith. These all died in faith. What that means is they lived and died possessing faith. The faith that is described in Hebrews chapter 11. They lived by faith and they did so until they died. That speaks of perseverance. In their traveling days through this earth, they lived until they died, depending upon the Lord. They lived until they died, trusting the Lord, leaning upon the Lord, believing God, having confidence in God. These all died in faith. They lived until they died, possessing faith. These all in their traveling days through this earth, until they died, possessed assurance in the Lord. That's what faith is. You have faith, you seek God. They lived until they died seeking God and pleasing God. For without faith, it is impossible to please God. So they lived pleasing God and they died pleasing God. Faith causes us to realize that God is real. They died in faith. Before they could die in faith, they had to live in faith. They lived in the reality of God. And they died in the reality of God. Though their traveling days in this life were through difficulties and adversities and obstacles, in one opposition after another. And though through this life they had sorrows and many great needs, they continued on. How long did they continue on? Until they died. These all died in faith. So we must ask ourselves, how do our traveling days compare? People get some strange ideas. They don't get them from Scripture. They get some strange ideas as if death is going to be something special, and yet their lives weren't. You'll pretty much die as you lived. These in their traveling days, secondly, could see afar off. Notice what it says. These all, not having received the promises, seen them afar off. Traveling through a dark world, traveling through a world of trouble and a world of testing, and a world of trials, a world of struggles, a world of evil and wickedness, traveling through a world of hatred against God and the things of God, traveling through a world where God is not honored, God is not admired, God is not sought, traveling through a world where the promises of God are not relied upon, and where the truth of God is not sought and the word of God is not obeyed, these all saw afar off. That is, they could see what others could not see. They could see the invisible. They could see further than any telescope. They could see further than the human eye. They could see afar off. It's not that they didn't see their circumstances, but they were able to see afar off from their circumstances. They were able to look beyond. They were able to look beyond the here and the now. Why is it that some folks are so moody? Well, it's their personality, hogwash. It's because they live by sight. You're able to see God. You're able to see God. That brings joy to the heart. They could see clearly a God who rules and reigns. Here we are in our traveling days. How far can we see? How far can you and I see? Thirdly, these in their traveling days were assured in the promises of God. Notice what it says. Again, these all. They saw the promises afar off, and notice what it says, and were persuaded of them. They were persuaded by what they saw afar off. They weren't persuaded by what they saw right here. They saw afar off, and they were persuaded. They saw what no human eye could see, and they were persuaded. So traveling through this life, they possessed, and they were possessed by an assured confidence in conviction. And this was so no matter what was going on. So here we are in our traveling days. What are we more sure and certain of? What we can see with the human eye? What we can think with the mind? Or what we can see by faith. Which is, where's our confidence? Where is our assurance? Just how persuaded are we of the promises of God? Are we persuaded enough to let go? Sing Blessed Assurance. People talk about their assurance. Well, just how assured are you? Just how persuaded are you? Oh, I'm fully persuaded, but they won't let go. I'm sorry, but you're delusional. Are we persuaded enough to cast all our cares upon Him? Just how persuaded are we? Are we persuaded enough to submit entirely to Him? Are we persuaded enough that God's ways are right, that I'm going to submit to Him? These were persuaded. How persuaded are we? Are we persuaded enough to lean all our weight upon Him? You know, I believe that that wall can sustain my weight. And I believe that enough that I'm not fearful of leaning up against that wall. I believe that that pew can hold my weight. And I'm persuaded enough that I don't even think about it when I sit down. Don't even think, it doesn't even cross my mind. Boy, I sure hope this pew holds up today. How persuaded are we in God? These were persuaded in their traveling days. Fourthly, these in their traveling days embraced the very things that they were persuaded in. Verse 13, these all died in faith. They persevered. They were not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, they had faith. They were persuaded of them. Of what? The promises of God that they had not yet seen fulfilled in their lives. And embraced them. The them again is the promises that they were persuaded of. Let me tell you something. You will embrace what you have assurance in. They embraced the promises of God. What does that mean? Well, we, Brother Mark and Tyler and I, just came back from a conference in Elkton. You go in the building, as it is here in other conferences, you embrace individuals. What are you doing? Well, it's a form of greeting. You're greeting them. How do we greet the promises of God? How do we greet the Word of God? Many are quite rude to the Word of God. The word embrace conveys the idea of affection. I'm sorry, but I'm going to be a little slow in embracing somebody that I believe hates me and wants to harm me. I might have a little difficulty. I'm going to be a little leery. Conveys the idea of affection. It means to hug. They embraced them. They hugged them. They hugged the promises of God. It means to hold, to press, to cling to. But you know what else embrace means? It means that we accept and we receive. You embrace an individual, you accept that individual. They come into your home, you embrace them, you've accepted them, you've received them. They embraced the promises of God. They embraced the things that God said. In other words, they accepted them and they received them. Traveling through this life, they saw the things of God afar off. And they possessed a deep love for what they saw. And they welcomed those things into their lives. And these things had a powerful impact upon their lives. I believe God is pleased when His people take this book, take what it says, and embrace it. Here we are in our traveling days. What is it that we are embracing? What is it that we embrace today? Does the heart love and cling to that which we can see with the physical eye? That which we can touch and handle? Or does the heart love and cling to things that we can only see by faith? They saw them afar off and were persuaded and embraced them. What do we welcome in our lives? What do we welcome in our lives more? Temporal things or spiritual things? Many times when you welcome the temporal in, you've kicked out the spiritual. What is it that we welcome in our lives? When you embrace somebody, you're glad to see them. You're joyful. What brings us more joy? Things we can see, the things of here and now, or things we can only see by faith, the spiritual. Fifthly, these in their traveling days produced a sense of detachment from the world. Notice what it says again, verse 13, these all. As you read down, we're seeing the things that these individuals did. They confessed. These all confessed. That means they declared and they made known. What did they declare? What did they make known? Well, they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They declared this with their mouths. More importantly, they showed it or declared it with their lives. They declared by the way they lived that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Do we declare with our lives that we are one who's far from home? That we are a foreigner in this world? You know, unless the stranger conforms, the habits and the ways and language of where he's passing through is very strange. And the habits and the ways and the language, are they strange to us? Or have we conformed? Have we learned to fit in? Unless he conforms to the ways of that foreign country, stranger is easily identified. His appearance is different. His speech is different. His way of life is different. His thoughts are different. Unless he conforms. God's people not only conform, they teach their children to conform also. A pilgrim is one who's just passing through for a time. He does not drive his stakes in too far. He does not allow himself to be weighted down. You know, it's a sad day God says, I want you to go 500 miles away. And you can't, because you're too weighted down. That's sad. It happens all the time. It happens all the time. The stranger, the pilgrim, does not allow himself to be weighted down. Nor is he distracted in his pilgrimage. These confessed. They confessed with their mouths, no doubt, but they confessed with their lives. This is not our home. I'm heading home. This land is foreign to me, was their confession. So here we are. In our traveling days, does our life confess that we are strangers and pilgrims? Does our speech, our dress, our mindset convey that we're not from around here? When I first started in sales in Kentucky, one of the first customers I spoke to, they said, "You're not from around here, are you?" How did they know that? Just the way I talked. I talked different. And I said, I was born here. And he said, well, you might have been, but you're not from around here. And that's how the world ought to look at us spiritually. They ought to talk to us and they ought to think in their minds, hey, you're not from around here. So does our speech, our dress, our mindset convey that we're not from around here? Do they sense that there's something peculiar about us? It disturbs me when God's people have to go out of their way to try to be different. To me, that speaks volumes of who you are. People of this world, they have a conversation with us. Do they go away somewhat mystified? Because we're different. Our lives ought to be mystifying to the world. Or our roots deep in this world. Our investment and attachment to the world so strong that people are left with the impression that we're pretty comfortable here. Does our life confess that we're strangers and pilgrims? Sixthly, these in their traveling days sought and desired something different than those around them. Notice again, these all, declare, verse 14, declare plainly with their speech and with their lifestyle. They declare plainly that they seek a country. To seek is to look for, to search, to hunt, to pursue. Their lives declare plainly that what they're looking for is not in this world. Their lives declare plainly that they were not in pursuit of the things of this world. Traveling through this life, they were seeking. They were being drawn to something different than the world around them. What was it that they were seeking? What was it that they were being drawn to? It was the things that they saw far off. The things that they were persuaded in. They were seeking that which was not of this world. They were seeking that which was beyond this world. That which they could see afar off. They were seeking what God had prepared for them. I'm not interested in what the world promises. Our interest ought to be, what does God have prepared for me this day? And that's what we ought to want to seek. Here we are in our traveling days. And the problem is that many who call themselves children of God are looking for the very same things that the world is looking for. Pursuing the very same things. Pursuing the same pleasures. Pursuing the same positions. Pursuing the same honor and approval and a security. What is it today that we seek? What is it today that we pursue? Does our life clearly and plainly declare that we are not in pursuit of the world? And I'll tell you right now, if you're pursuing something different than everyone around you, you're going to be odd. You're not going to fit in. And you ought to get concerned every time you fit in with this world. It ought to concern you. Notice, this is still under the sixth point. These all desire a better country. That is, a heavenly. Traveling through this life, they possess different desires. From verse 15, if truly they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they would have returned. You know why? Some people are always going back to the hog pen. Oh, their life is just so unfortunate. They never catch a break. You know why they just seem to go back over and over? Because that's where their mind is. You're going to seek what you're mindful of. Why is it that some pursue the worldly? And you can never convince them to pursue the spiritual because their mind is on the world. And then they think. I've had people say to me, Dan, you don't understand. When I retire, then I'll have time for those things. No, you won't, because your mind will still be just as stinking and rotten as it is now. Working is not the problem. The problem is the mind. And had they been mindful of that country where they came out, they would have returned. But they didn't. Because that's not where their mind was. Their mind was upon heavenly things. And therefore they sought heavenly things. So we need to examine where our desire is. Lastly, these in their traveling days lived to the honor of God. Verse 16. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God. You know, I thought much on those words. Wherefore God was not ashamed to be called their God. That tells me that it's possible for God to be ashamed. I can't explain it. Traveling through this life, they did that which was pleasing to God. They manifested His person. They manifested His beauty and value. Their lives were a radiance of His person. Notice those two words. Their God. Their God. Traveling through this life, God was relevant in their lives. Their God. He was relevant. He was a dominating factor. He was the object of their lives, the center, and the emphasis of their lives. God was not ashamed to be called their God. They were occupied with God. Here we are in our traveling days. Do our lives blaze forth who God is? Is God not ashamed to be called our God? Here in our traveling days, do our hearts and lives and mindset and our spirit and our attitudes, do they bring shame? Do they bring shame to God? And what can be worse? I'm sorry, but I can't think of anything worse than bringing shame. In closing, again, notice those two words. Their God. Their God. Here we are. In our traveling days, some have traveled further than others. Some of us may not have many more traveling days left. But here we are in our traveling days, traveling through this life of cares and burdens and difficulties, problems, traveling through this life where there are storms and where there are foes and battles. As we travel through this life in our traveling days, sometimes we have to travel some steep mountains. Sometimes we have to travel in some deep valleys. Other times we're traveling very crooked roads where you can't see very far, but we can still see far off. Sometimes we travel rocky roads. Can be difficult and uncomfortable. But throughout our traveling days, we have a God. And He's almighty. And He's greater than anything that you and I are called upon to endure. He is greater than anything we might have to endure through our earthly pilgrimage. Can you see Him? Their God. Is He your God? Can you see Him? Can you see God? Can you feel Him? Can you feel His power? Can you feel His presence? No, and I'll tell you why. Because brother so-and-so, if that's what you really believe, you won't feel His presence. I'll tell you why you and I don't feel His presence. It's us. It's us. They're God. They're God. I do not know, nor do you, what the rest of my traveling days may involve. This may be the last day I travel through this earth. Don't know. I'm not fearful. If this is the last traveling day on this earth, I'll tell you what, this is the best day of my life. If this is. Because the day I go to be with the Lord is the best day of my life. And if this does happen to be my last traveling day, don't say, oh, poor dead Brother Dan. This is the best day of my life. But we don't know. We don't know what our traveling days may involve, nor do I know how many traveling days I have left. Some of us can do the math, and we've already lived most of our traveling days. I mean, we know that. I mean, any one of us could die at any time, at any age, but You just do the math, you know. I mean, I'll be 60 years old in February. Don't forget that. So I know. I mean, I don't know how many days I have left, but I know, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to live to 120. I'm pretty sure of that. And I'm pretty sure the Lord's going to come back before that. So just basic math, I know that I've traveled most of my days. If you're in your 70s and 80s, it's not hard to figure. I don't mean to be depressing. This isn't depressing. But we just don't know. But oh, what a wonderful journey it is with God. Whatever your journey's been like up to this point, if it hasn't been a journey with God, you know what you need to do? You need to start over. And however many days you have left, you need to make them wonderful days. And travel with God. In closing, that's the second time, but 1 Peter 1. You know why pastors close so much? It's because a lot of people think that's the best part of the sermon. So you just keep doing it. Then at the end they say, man, that was good. He closed 8 times. 1 Peter 1, verse 17. 1 Peter 1, verse 17. Recalling the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, then notice, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. That's reverence. Here's why. For as much as you know, that you were not redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold, from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. Pass the time of your sojourning here. And the time of my sojourning is here. It's not there, it's here. Pass that time in fear. I ask you today, how do you pass the time of your sojourning? You and I that are saved, we are pilgrims. We are strangers and we are pilgrims. That is, we're foreigners unless we conform. And that's why Paul said in Romans 12, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed. It's pretty sad, considering the days in which we live, considering the direction of this world. God's people ought to feel more and more like an alien every single day. You go and you walk around a mall, you ought to be thinking, man, I don't believe. What planet am I on? We ought not feel at home in this world. And if we do, something's terribly wrong. Something's terribly wrong. My physical body, when it comes time to die, my physical body may struggle. My physical body may gasp for breath, and one might get the idea, oh, they're really struggling to stay here. No, that's not the case. The soul of a child of God who knows this world is not their home, they're ready. Are you ready today? Are you ready to leave this life? Are you ready for your journey to end? Are you ready for your sojourning days, the time of your sojourning, to come to an end? What a wonderful thing to be saved. What a wonderful thing to be able to live this life with God, to talk with Him, for Him to talk to us, to embrace the things of God. You embrace the things of the world, it'll weigh you down. It'll weigh you down. You embrace the things of God, it'll lift you above the things of this world. If you're here and lost today, this message has been for the saved. If you're here and lost today, oh, we long for God to save your soul. Oh, how we desire that God would come down and save your sinful soul. He's the only one who can. And your only hope is in Jesus Christ. As we sing, Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.